Star Wars, The Last Command by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 5, side 1. Is everyone okay? Lando asked, eyes flicking up and down his friend. I sent Chewie up, but they told me I should stay here with the prisoner. Everyone's fine, Han assured him, as Bell Iblis stepped past Lando and pulled the medic aside. Chewie was up there before I left, and he's helping Leia and Winter set up in another suite. By the way, thanks for coming up after us. No charge, Lando grunted, especially since all we got to do was watch. What, you couldn't have held off your little fireworks display for 2 more minutes? Don't look at me, pal, Han countered. It was Mara's timing, not mine. A shadow seemed to cross Lando's face. Right, Mara. Han frowned at him. What's that supposed to mean? I don't know, Lando said, shaking his head. There's still something about her that bothers me. Remember back at Carda's base on Milker, just before Thrawn dropped in and we had to go hide in the forest? You said you thought you knew her from somewhere, Han said. It was a comment that had been stuck in the back of his mind all these months, too. You ever figure out where? Not yet, Lando growled, but I'm getting close. I know it. Han looked at Bell Iblis and the medic, thinking back to what Luke had said a couple of days later on their way off of Mirker, that Mara had told Luke flat out that she wanted to kill him. Wherever you saw her, she seems to be on our side now. Yeah, Lando said darkly. Maybe. Bell Iblis beckoned them over. We're going to try to wake him up, he said. Come on. They went inside. Surrounding the ICU bed were half a dozen medics and MD droids, plus 3 of Akbar's top security officers. At Bell Iblis's nod, one of the medics did something to the treatment wrap around the Imperial's upper arm. And as Han and Lando found places at the side of the bed, he coughed suddenly and his eyes fluttered open. Major Himran, one of the security officers asked. Can you hear me, Major? Yes, the Imperial breathed, blinking a couple of times. His eyes drifted between the people standing around him, and it seemed to Han that he suddenly became more alert. Yes, he repeated, stronger this time. Your attack has failed, the officer told him. Your men are all dead, and we're not sure yet whether you're going to live. Himran sighed and closed his eyes. But that alertness was still in his face. Fortunes of war, he said. Bell Iblis leaned forward. How did you get into the palace, Major? Guess it can't hurt now, Himran murmured. His breathing was becoming labored. Back door. Put in, same time, private passage system. Locked from inside. She let us in. Someone let you in, Bell Iblis said. Who? Himran opened his eyes. Our contact here, name Jade. Bell Iblis threw Han a startled glance. Mara Jade? Yes. Himran closed his eyes again, let out a deep breath. Special agent of Empire, once called Emperor's Hand. He fell silent and seemed to sink a little deeper into the bed. That's all I can permit right now, General Bell Iblis, the chief medic said. He needs rest, and we need to get him stabilized. In a day or two, perhaps he'll be strong enough to answer more questions. That's all right, one of the security officers said, heading for the door. He's given us enough to start with. Wait a minute, Han called, starting after him. Where are you going? Where do you think? The officer retorted. I'm going to have Mara Jade put under arrest. On what? The word of an Imperial officer? He has no choice, Solo, Bel Iblis said quietly, laying a hand on Han's shoulder. A precautionary detention is required after an accusation this serious. Don't worry, we'll get it straightened out. We better, Han warned. Imperial agent, my eye. She took out at least three of them up there. He broke off at the look on Lando's face. Lando? Slowly, the other focused on him. That's it, he said quietly. That's where I saw her before. She was one of the new dancers at Jabba the Hutt's place on Tatooine when we were setting up your rescue. Han frowned. At Jabba's? Yes, and I'm not sure, but in all that confusion before we left for the Great Pit of Carkoon, I seem to remember hearing her asking Jabba to let her come along on the sail barge. No, not asking. Begging was more like it. Han looked down at the unconscious Major Himron. The Emperor's hand? And Luke had said she wanted to kill him. He shook off the thought. I don't care where she was, he said. She still shot those Imperials off our backs up there. Come on, let's go help Leia get the twins settled, and then figure out what's going on around here. Chapter 10 The Whistler's Whirlpool Tap Cafe on Trogon was one of the best examples Carda had ever seen of a good idea ruined by the failure of its designers to think their whole plan through. Situated on the coast of Trogon's most densely populated continent, the Whirlpool had been built around a natural formation called the Drinking Cup, a bowl-shaped rock pit open to the sea at its base. Six times a day, Trogon's massive tidal shifts sent the water level inside the bowl either up or down, turning it into a violent whitewater maelstrom in the process. With the Tap Cafe's tables arranged in concentric circles around the bowl, it made for a nice balance between luxury and spectacular natural drama. A perfect drawing card for the billions of humans and aliens enamored of that combination. Or so the designers and their backers had thought. Unfortunately, they'd rather overlooked 3 points. First, that such a place was almost by definition a tourist attraction, dependent on the vagaries of that market. Second, that once the charm of the Whirlpool itself wore off, the centralized design pretty well precluded remodeling the place for any other type of entertainment. And third, that even if such remodeling had occurred, the racket from the miniature breakers in the drinking cup would probably have drowned it out anyway. The people of the Kalia Sajlilu on Birkest had turned their fizzle tourist attraction into a trade center. The people of Trogon had simply abandoned the Whistler's Whirlpool. I keep expecting someone to buy this place and refurbish it, Cardi commented, looking around at the empty seats and tables as he and Avis walked down one of the aisles toward the drinking cup and the figure waiting there for them. The years of neglect showed, certainly, but the place wasn't nearly as bad as it could have been. I always liked it myself, Avis agreed. Kind of noisy, but you get that almost everywhere you go these days. Certainly made eavesdropping between tables difficult, Carter said. That alone made the place worthwhile. Hello, Gillespie. Carda? Gillespie nodded in greeting, getting up from his table and offering his hand. I was starting to wonder if you were really going to show. The meeting's not for another 2 hours, Avis reminded him. Oh, come on, Gillespie said with a sly grin. Since when does Talon Carda ever arrive anywhere on time? Though you could have saved yourself the trouble. My people have already checked things out. I appreciate the effort, Carda said. Which was not to say, of course, that he was going to pull his own people off that same job. With the Empire breathing down his neck and an Imperial garrison only 20 kilometers away, a little extra security wouldn't hurt. You have the guest list. Right here, Gillespie said, picking up a data pad and handing it over. Afraid it's not as long as I'd hoped. That's all right, Carter assured him, running his eyes down the list. Small, certainly, but highly select, with some of the biggest names in smuggling coming personally. Brask, Parta, Eller, Gravis. That would be Billy's group. Billy himself didn't get around too much anymore. Mezik, Kleigun, the Zethabra, Ferrier. He looked up sharply. Ferrier, he asked. Niles Ferrier, the spaceship thief. Yeah, that's him, Gillespie nodded, frowning. He does smuggling, too. He also works for the Empire, Carter countered. So do we, Gillespie shrugged. Last I heard, so did you. I'm not talking about smuggling merchandise to or from Imperial worlds, Carter said. I'm talking about working directly for Grand Admiral Thrawn, doing such minor jobs as snatching the man who located the Katana fleet for him. Gillespie's face tightened just noticeably. Remembering, perhaps, his mad scramble off Ukiyo one step ahead of the Imperial invasion force in those same Katana fleet ships. Ferrier did that. And seemed to enjoy doing it, Carda told him, pulling out his comlink and thumbing it on. Lacton? Right here, Lacton's voice came promptly from the comlink. How do things look at the garrison? Like a morgue on its day off, Lacton said wryly. There hasn't been any movement in or out of the place for at least 3 hours. Carter cocked an eyebrow. Indeed, that's very interesting. How about flights in or out? Or activity within the garrison grounds themselves? Nothing of either, Lacton said. No kidding, Carter. The place looks completely dead. Must have gotten some new training holos in or something. Carter smiled tightly. Yes, I'm sure that's it. All right, keep on them. Let me know immediately if there's activity of any sort. You got it. Out. Carter thumbed off the comlink and returned it to his belt. The Imperials aren't moving from their garrison, he told the others. Apparently, not at all. Isn't that the way we want it? Gillespie asked. They can't drop a hammer on the party if they're snugged up there in their barracks. Agreed, Carter nodded. On the other hand, I've never yet heard of an Imperial garrison simply taking a day off. Point, Gillespie admitted. Unless this big campaign of Thrawn's has all these third-rate garrisons undermanned. All the more reason for them to be running daily patrols as a visible show of force, Carter said. A man like Grand Admiral Thrawn counts on his opponent's perceptions to fill in the gaps in his actual strength. Maybe we should cancel the meeting, Ave suggested, looking uneasily back at the entrance. Could be they're setting us up. Carter looked past Gillespie to the churning water sloshing up the walls of the drinking cup. In just under 2 hours, the water would be at its lowest and quietest level, which was why he'd arranged the meeting for then. If he called it off now, admitted to all these big-time smugglers that the Empire had Talon Carter jumping at shadows... No, he said slowly. We'll stay. Our guests won't exactly be sitting here helpless after all, and we should have adequate warning of any official moves against us. He smiled thinly. Actually, it's almost worth the risk just to see what they have in mind. Gillespie shrugged. Maybe they're not planning anything at all. Maybe we chicaned Imperial intelligence so good that they missed this completely. That hardly sounds like the Imperial intelligence we all know and love, Carda said, looking around. Still, we have 2 hours before the meeting. Let's see what we can arrange, shall we? They sat there in silence, each of the individuals and small groups sitting around its own table while he made his pitch. And as he finished and looked around at them, Carter knew they weren't convinced. Brask made it official. "You speak well, Carter," the Broob said, his thin tongue flicking out between his lips as he tasted the air. "One might say passionately, if such a word could ever be said to apply to you, but you do not persuade."
"Do I truly not persuade, Brask?" Carter countered. "Or do I merely fail to overcome your reluctance to stand up to the Empire?"
Brask's expression didn't change, but the pitted gray-green skin of his face, about all of him that was visible outside his body armor, turned a little grayer. "The Empire pays well for smuggled goods," he said.
"And for slaves as well?"
Ptah demanded in the sing-song Hodin language. Her snake-like head appendages bounced gently as she snapped her mouth in a Hodin gesture of contempt.
"And for victims of kidnap, you are no better than was the hut."
One of Brask's bodyguards shifted in his seat. A man Carter knew who had escaped with Brask from Jabba the Hutt's indentured servitude when Luke Skywalker and his allies had chopped off the head of that organization. "No one who knew the Hutt would say that," he growled, jabbing a stiff finger on the table beside him for emphasis.
"We're not here to argue," Carter said, before Ptah or any of her entourage could respond.
"Why are we here?" Mazik spoke up, lounging in his seat between a horn-headed Gotal and a decorative but vacant-faced woman with her hair done up in elaborate plaitlets around half a dozen large enameled needles.
"You'll forgive me, Carter, but this sounds very much like a New Republic recruitment speech."
"Yeah, and Han Solo's already pitched that one to us," Drabus agreed, propping his feet up on his table. "Billy's already said he wasn't interested in hauling the New Republic's cargo."
"Too dangerous," Qui-Gon put in, shaking his shaggy black and white striped mane. "Far too dangerous."
"Really?" Carda said, feigning surprise. "Why is it dangerous?"
"You must be joking,"
the Zahethra rumbled, shaking his mane again.
"With Imperial harassment of New Republic shipping as it is, you take your life in claw grip every time you lift off."
"So what you're saying," Carter suggested, "is that Imperial strength is becoming increasingly dangerous to our business activities."
"Oh, no, you don't, Card,"
Brask said, waving a large finger toward him.
"You're not going to persuade us into going along with this scheme by twisting our words."
"I haven't suggested any schemes, Brask," Carter said. "All I've suggested is that we provide the New Republic with any useful information we might happen to come across in the course of our activities."
"And you don't think the Empire would find this activity unacceptable?" Brask asked. "Since when do we care what the Empire thinks?" Ptah countered. "Since Grand Admiral Thrawn took command," Brask said bluntly. "I've heard stories of this warlord, Ptah. It was he who forced my world under the Imperial Shroud."
"That ought to be a good reason for you to stand up to him," Gillespie pointed out. "If you're afraid of what Thrawn might do to you now, just think what'll happen to you if he gets the whole galaxy under the Imperial Shroud again."
"Nothing will happen to us if we don't oppose him," Brask insisted. "They need our services too much for that."
"That's a nice theory," a voice spoke up from near the back of the group. "But I can tell you right now it won't hold a mug's worth of vacuum."
Carter focused on the speaker. He was a big, thick-built human with dark hair and a beard, a thin, unlit cigar clenched in his teeth.
"And you are?" Carter asked, though he was pretty sure he knew.
"Niles Ferrier," the other identified himself. "And I can tell you flat out that minding your own business isn't going to do you a blame bit of good if Thrawn decides he wants you."
"And yet he pays well," Mazik said,
idly stroking the hand of his female companion. Or so I've heard.
You've heard that, huh? Ferrier growled. Have you also heard that he grabbed me off New Cove and confiscated my ship, and then ordered me out on a nasty little errand for him aboard a bomb-rigged intelligence bucket? Oh, and go ahead and guess what the penalty was going to be if we couldn't do it.
Carter looked around the room, listening to the gently sloshing water in the drinking cup behind him and holding his silence. This was hardly the way Solo had described Ferrier's involvement, and all other things being equal, he would probably trust Solo's rendition over the ship thief's. Still, it was always possible Solo had misinterpreted things. And if Ferrier's story helped convince the others that the Empire had to be opposed...
Were you paid for all your trouble? Mazik asked.
Course I was paid, Ferrier sniffed. That's not the point.
It is for me, Mazik said, turning back to look at Carda.
Sorry, Carda, but I still haven't heard any good reason for me to stick my neck out this way.
What about the Empire's new traffic in clones? Carda reminded him. Doesn't that worry you?
I'm not especially happy about it, no, Mazik conceded. But I figure that's the New Republic's problem, not ours.
When does it become our problem? Parta demanded. When the Empire has replaced all smugglers with these clones.
No one's going to replace us with clones, Travis said. You know, Brask is right, Carter. The Empire needs us too much to bother us, provided we don't take sides.
Exactly. Mazik said. We're businessmen, pure and simple, and I, for one, intend to stay that way. If the New Republic can outbid the Empire for information, I'll be happy to sell it to them. If not...
He shrugged.
Carter nodded, privately conceding defeat. Parta might be willing to discuss the matter further, and possibly one or two of the others. Elor, perhaps... The Duro had so far stayed out of the conversation, which, with his species, was often a sign of agreement. But none of the rest were convinced, and pushing them further at this point would only annoy them. Later, perhaps, they might be willing to accept the realities of the Empire's threat.
Very well, he said. I think it's clear now where all of you stand on this. Thank you for your time. Perhaps we can plan to meet again after...
And, without warning, the back of the Whistler's whirlpool blew in. "Stay where you are," an amplified voice shouted through the din. "Face forward. No one move. Everyone here is under Imperial detention."
Carter squinted over the heads of his suddenly frozen audience to the rear of the building. Through the smoke and dust, he could see a double line of about 30 Imperial Army troops crunching their way across the debris where the back wall had been, their flanks protected by two pair of white-armored stormtroopers. Behind them, almost obscured by the haze, he could see two chariot command speeders hovering in backup positions.
"So they came to the party after all," he murmured.
"With a big hammer," Gillespie agreed tightly from beside him. "Looks like you were right about Ferrier."
"Perhaps."
Carter looked over at Ferrier, half expecting to see a triumphant smirk on the big man's face. But Ferrier wasn't looking at him. His attention was slightly off to the side, not looking at the approaching troopers, but at a section of wall to the right of the new hole. Carter followed the line of his gaze. Just in time to see a solid black shadow detach itself from the wall and move silently up behind one set of flanking stormtroopers.
"On the other hand, perhaps not," he told Gillespie, nodding slightly toward the shadow. "Take a look, just past Elor's shoulder."
Gillespie inhaled sharply.
"What in hell's name is that?"
Ferrier's pet devil, I think, Carda said. Sometimes called wraiths. Solo told me about him. This is it. Everyone ready?
We're ready, Gillespie said. And there were echoing murmurs from behind them.
Carda swept his gaze across his fellow smugglers and their aides, catching each pair of eyes in turn. They gazed back, their shock at the ambush rapidly turning to a cold anger. And they, too, were ready. The shadow of Ferrier's defile reached the end of the approaching line of Imperials, and suddenly one of the stormtroopers was hurled bodily off his feet to slam crosswise into his companion. The nearest troopers reacted instantly, swinging their weapons to the side as they searched for the unseen attacker.
Now, Carter murmured.
And from the corner of his eye, he saw the long muzzles of two Blastech A-280 blaster rifles swing up over the rim of the drinking cup and open fire. The first salvo cut through the center of the line, taking out a handful of the Imperials before the rest were able to dive for cover among the empty tables and chairs. Carda took a long step forward, tipping over the nearest table and dropping to one knee behind it. An almost unnecessary precaution. The Imperials' attention had been distracted away from their intended prisoners for a fatal half-second. And even as Carda yanked out his weapon, the entire room exploded into blaster fire. Brask and his bodyguards took out an entire squad of the troopers in the first 5 seconds, with a synchronized fire that showed the Broob hadn't forgotten his mercenary background. Partaz's entourage was concentrating on the other end of the line, their weapons smaller and less devastating than Brask's heavy blaster pistols, but more than enough to keep the Imperials pinned down. Travis, Elor, and Klingon were taking advantage of that cover fire to pick off the remaining troopers, one by one. Mezik, in contrast, was ignoring the nearer threat of the troopers to blast away at the chariot command speeders outside. A good idea, actually.
Avis, fine, Carda shouted over the din. Concentrate fire on the chariots.
There were shouts of acknowledgement from the edge of the drinking cup behind them, and the rifle blasts sizzling past his shoulder shifted their aim. Carda eased a little over his table, caught a glimpse of Mazik's female companion, her plaited hair down around her shoulders now, and her face no longer blank, as she hurled the last of her enameled needles with lethal accuracy at one of the troopers. Another Imperial lunged up out of cover, bringing his rifle to bear on her, falling backward again as Carda's shot caught him square in the torso. A pair of shots hit his cover table, sending clouds of splinters into the air and forcing him to drop to the floor. From outside came the sound of a massive explosion, echoed an instant later by a second blast. And then, suddenly, it was all over. Carefully, Carda eased up over his table again. The others were doing likewise, weapons held at the ready as they surveyed the wreckage around them. Klingon was holding an arm gingerly out from his body as he dug in his belt pack for a bandage. Brask's tunic was burned away in several places, the body armor beneath it blackened and blistered.
Everyone all right? Carda called.
Mazik straightened up. Even at this distance, Carda could see the white knuckles gripping his blaster.
They got Lishma, he said, his voice deadly quiet. He wasn't even shooting.
Carda dropped his gaze to the broken table at Mazik's feet, and the Gotal lying motionless and half-hidden beneath it.
I'm sorry, he said, and meant it.
He'd always rather liked the Gotal people.
I'm sorry, too, Mazik said, jamming his blaster back into its holster and looking at Carda with smoldering eyes. But the Empire is going to be a lot sorrier.
Okay, Carda, I'm convinced. Where do I sign up?
Somewhere far away from here, I think, Carda said, peering out the shattered wall at the burning chariots as he pulled out his comlink.
No one was moving out there,
but that wouldn't last. They'll surely have backup on the way. Lacton, Torvay, you there?
Right here, Torvay's voice came. What in space was all that?
The Imperials decided they wanted to play after all, Carda told him grimly. Sneaked in with a couple of chariots. Anyone stirring in either of your areas?
Not here, Torvay said. Wherever they came from, they didn't start at the spaceport.
Ditto here, Lacton put in. Garrison still quiet as a grave. Let's hope it stays that way for a few more minutes, Carda said. Pass the word to the others. We're pulling back to the ship.
On our way. See you there.
Carda flicked off the comlink and turned around. Gillespie was just helping Abyss and Fine pull themselves out over the lip of the drinking cup, the web harnesses that had held them suspended just beneath the rocky edge trailing behind them.
Nicely done, gentlemen, he complimented them. Thank you.
Our pleasure, Abyss grunted, popping his harness and accepting his blaster rifle back from Gillespie.
Even with the water level at its lowest, he noticed, the turbulence had still managed to soak both men up to their knees.
Time to make ourselves scarce?
Just as soon as we can, Carda agreed, turning back to the other smugglers.
Well, gentlefolk, we'll see you in space.
There was no ambush waiting for them by the wild Carda. No ambush, no fighter pursuit, no Imperial Star Destroyer lurking in orbit for them. From all appearances, the incident back at the Whistler's Whirlpool might just as well have been an elaborate mass hallucination. Except for the destruction to the Tap Cafe and the gutted chariots and the very real burns. And, of course, the dead Gotal.
So what's the plan? Travis asked.
You want us to help hunt down this clone pipeline you mentioned, right?
Yes, Carda told him. We know it goes through Poderis, so Oris Sector is the place to start.
It once went through Poderis, Klingon pointed out. Thrawn could have moved it by now.
Though presumably not without leaving some traces we can backtrack, Carda said. So, have we an agreement?
My group's with you, Ferrier put in promptly. Matter of fact, Carda, if you want, I'll see what I can do about getting your people some real fighting ships.
I may take you up on that, Carda promised. Parta?
We will assist in the search, Parta said,
her voice about as angry as Carda had ever heard it. The death of the Gotal was hitting her almost as hard as it had hit Mazik.
The Empire must be taught a lesson.
Thank you, Carda said. Mazik?
I agree with Parta, he said coldly. But I think the lesson needs to be a bit more eye-catching. You go ahead and do your clone hunt. Elor and I have something else in mind.
Carda looked at Abyss, who shrugged.
If he wants to go slap their hands, who are we to stop him? The other murmured.
Carda shrugged back and nodded.
All right, he said to Mazik. Good luck. Try not to bite off more than you can chew.
We won't, Mazik said. We're heading out. See you later.
At the far starboard edge of the viewport, two of the ships in their loose formation flickered with pseudo-motion and vanished into hyperspace.
That just leaves you, Brask, Carda prompted. What do you say?
There was a long, subtly voiced sigh from the comm speaker, one of many untranslatable verbal gestures.
I cannot and will not stand against Grand Admiral Thrawn, he said at last. To give information to the New Republic would be to invite his hatred and wrath upon me.
Another voiced sigh.
But I will also not interfere with your activities or bring them to his attention.
Fair enough, Carda nodded.
It was, in fact, far more than he had expected from Brask.
The Brub's fear of the Empire ran deep.
Well then, let's organize our groups and plan to reconvene over Chazwa in, say, 5 days. Good luck, all.
The others acknowledged and signed off, and one by one made their jumps to lightspeed.
So much for staying neutral, Aves sighed as he checked the nav computer. Mara's going to have a fit when she finds out. When is she coming back, by the way?
As soon as I can find a way to get her here, Carda said, feeling a twinge of guilt.
It had been several days since he'd gotten the message that she and Ghent were ready to rejoin him, a message that had probably been several more days in reaching him in the first place. She was probably ready to bite hull metal by now.
After that last raise in the Imperial price on us, there are probably 20 bounty hunters waiting off Coruscant for us to show up.
Aves shifted uncomfortably.
Is that what you think happened down there? Some bounty hunter got wind of the meeting and tipped off the Imperials?
Carter gazed out at the stars.
I really don't know what all that was about, he admitted. Bounty hunters generally avoid tipping off the authorities unless they already have a financial agreement. On the other hand, when the Imperials go to the effort of carrying out a raid, one expects them to do a more competent job of it.
Unless they were just tailing Gillespie and didn't know the rest of us were there,
Aves suggested hesitantly.
Could be that 3 squads of troops and a couple of chariots is all he rates.
I suppose that's possible, Carda conceded. Hard to believe their intelligence was that spotty, though. Well, I'll have our people on Trogon make some quiet inquiries. See if they can backtrack that unit and find out where the tip-off came from. In the meantime, we have a hunt to organize. Let's get to it.
Miles Ferrier was smiling behind that unkempt beard of his, Pelion noticed, as the stormtroopers escorted him across the bridge. A smug, highly self-satisfied type of smile that showed he had no idea whatsoever why he'd been brought to the Chimera.
He's here, Admiral, Pelion murmured.
I know, Thrawn said calmly, his back to the approaching spaceship thief.
Calmly, but with a deadly look in his glowing red eyes. Grimacing, Pelion braced himself. This wasn't going to be pretty. The group reached Thrawn's command chair and halted.
Niles Ferrier, Admiral, the stormtrooper commander stated, as per orders.
For a long moment, the Grand Admiral didn't move. And as Pelion watched, the smirk on Ferrier's face slipped a bit.
You were on Trogon 2 days ago, Thrawn said at last, still not turning around. You met with 2 men currently wanted by the Empire, Talon Carda and Samuel Thomas Gillespie. You also persuaded a small and unprepared task force under one Lieutenant Reynol Kosk to launch a rash attack on this meeting, an attack which failed. Is all this true?
Sure is, Ferrier nodded. See, that's why I sent you that message, so you'd know.
Then I should like to hear your reasons, Thrawn cut him off, swiveling his chair around at last to gaze up at the thief. Why I should not order your immediate execution.
Ferrier's mouth dropped open.
What? He said. But I've gotten in with Carda. He trusts me now, see? That was the whole idea. I can dig out the rest of his gang and deliver the whole bunch to you.
He trailed off, his throat bobbing as he swallowed.
You were directly responsible for the deaths of 4 stormtroopers and 32 Imperial Army troops, Thrawn continued. Also, for the destruction of 2 chariot command speeders and their crews. I am not the Lord Darth Vader, Ferrier. I do not spend my men recklessly, nor do I take their deaths lightly.
The color was starting to leave Ferrier's face.
Sir, Admiral, I know that you've put a bounty on Karda's whole group of almost... But all that pales in comparison to the utter disaster you've created. Thrawn cut him off again. Intelligence informed me of this meeting of smuggler chiefs almost 4 days ago. I knew the location, the timing, and the probable guest list. And I had already given the Trogan garrison precise instructions. Precise instructions, Ferrier, to leave it strictly alone.
Pelion hadn't thought Ferrier's face could get any paler. He was wrong.
You? But, sir, but... I don't get it.
I'm sure you don't, Thrawn said, his voice deadly quiet. He gestured, and from his position beside Thrawn's chair, the Nogri bodyguard Rook took a step forward.
But it's really quite simple. I know these smugglers, Ferrier. I've studied their operations, and I've made it a point to deal personally with each of them at least once over the past year. None of them wants to become entangled in this war, and without your staged attack, I am quite certain they would have left Trogan convinced that they could sit things out in traditional smuggler neutrality.
He gestured again to Rook, and suddenly the Nogri's slender assassin's knife was in his hand.
The result of your interference, he continued quietly, has been to unite them against the Empire, precisely the turn of events I'd gone to great lengths to avoid.
His glowing eyes bored into Ferrier's face.
And I do not appreciate having my efforts wasted.
Ferrier's eyes flicked back and forth between Thrawn and the blade in Rook's hand, his face now gone from pasty white to gray.
I'm sorry, Admiral, he said,
the words coming out with obvious difficulty.
I didn't mean... I mean... Just give me another chance, huh? Just one more chance. I can deliver Karda, I swear to you. Well, hey, I mean, never mind even Karda. I'll deliver all of them to you.
He ran out of words and just stood there looking sick. Thrawn let him hang for another few heartbeats.
You are a small-minded fool, Ferrier, he said at last. But even fools occasionally have their uses. You will have one more chance.
This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.